Good morning. I have a story for you. This is from a book we haven't read from before. It's by Walter Wangiran Jr., and the book is the same title as the story I'm going to read this morning. It's Rag Man. I saw a strange sight. I stumbled upon a story most strange, like nothing my life, my street sense, my sly tongue had ever prepared me for. Hush, child, hush now, and I will tell it to you. Even before the dawn one Friday morning, I noticed a young man, handsome and strong, walking the alleys of our city. He was pulling an old cart filled with clothes, both bright and new. He was calling in a clear tenor voice, "Rags." Ah, the air was foul and the first light filthy to be crossed by such sweet music. Rags, new rags for old. I take your tired rags. Rags. Now, this is a wonder, I thought to myself, for the man stood 6'4", and his arms were like tree limbs, hard and muscular, and his eyes flashed intelligence. Could he find no better job than this? Be a rag man in the inner city. I followed him. My curiosity drove me, and I wasn't disappointed. Soon the rag man saw a woman sitting on her back porch. She was sobbing into a handkerchief, sighing and shedding a thousand tears. Her knees and elbows made a sad X. Her shoulders shook. Her heart was breaking. The rag man stopped his cart. Quietly, he walked to the woman, stepping around tin cans, dead toys, and Pampers. "Give me your rag," he said so gently, "and I'll give you another." He slipped the handkerchief from her eyes. She looked up, and he laid across her palm a linen cloth so clean and new that it shined. She blinked from the gift to the giver. Then, as he began to pull his cart again, the rag man did a strange thing. He put her stained handkerchief to his own face, and then he began to weep, to sob as grievously as she had done, his shoulders shaking. Yet she was left without a tear. "This is a wonder," I breathed to myself, and followed the sobbing rag man like a child who cannot turn away from the mystery. Rags, rags, new rags for old. In a little while, when the sky showed gray behind the rooftops, and I could see the shredded curtains hanging out back windows, the ragman came upon a girl whose head was wrapped in a bandage, whose eyes were empty. Blood soaked her bandage. A single line of blood ran down her cheek. Now the tall rag man looked upon this child with pity, and he drew a lovely yellow bonnet from his cart. "Give me your rag," he said, tracing his own line on her cheek, "and I'll give you mine." The child could only gaze at him while he loosened the bandage, removed it, and tied it to his own head. The bonnet he set on hers. And I gasped at what I saw, for with the bandage went the wound. Against his brow it ran darker, more substantial blood, his own. "Rags, rags, I take old rags," cried the sobbing, bleeding, strong, intelligent rag man. The sun hurt both the sky, now, and my eyes. The rag man seemed more and more to hurry. "Are you going to work?" he asked a man who leaned against a telephone pole. The man shook his head. The ragman pressed him. "Do you have a job?" "Are you crazy?" sneered the other. He pulled away from the pole, revealing the right sleeve of his jacket. Flat, the cuff stuffed into the pocket. He had no arm. "So," said the ragman, "give me your jacket and I'll give you mine." So much quiet authority in his voice. The one-armed man took off his jacket, So did the rag man, and I trembled at what I saw. For the rag man's arm stayed in its sleeve. When the other put it on, he had two good arms, thick as tree limbs. But the rag man only had one. "Go to work," he said. After that, he found a drunk lying unconscious beneath an army blanket, an old man hunched, wizened, and sick. He took that blanket and wrapped it around himself, but for the drunk, he left new clothes. And now I had to run to keep up with the rag man, though he was weeping uncontrollably and bleeding freely at the forehead, pulling his cart with one arm, stumbling for drunkenness, falling again and again, exhausted, old, old, and sick. Yet he went with terrible speed. On spider's legs, he skittered through the alleys of the city, this mile and the next, until he came to its limits, and then he rushed beyond. I wept to see the change in this man. I hurt to see his sorrow. And yet I needed to see where he was going in such haste, perhaps to know what drove him so. The little old rag man, he came to a landfill. He came to the garbage pits. And then I wanted to help him in what he did, but I hung back, hiding. He climbed a hill. With tormented labor, he cleared a little space on that hill. Then he sighed. He laid down. He pillowed his head on a handkerchief and a jacket. He covered his bones with an army blanket, and he died. Oh, how I cried to witness that death. I slumped in a junked car and wailed and mourned as one who has no hope, because I had come to love the rag man. Every other face had faded in the wonder of this man, and I cherished him, but he died. I sobbed myself to sleep. I did not know, how could I know, that I slept through Friday night and Saturday and its night too. But then on Sunday morning, I was wakened by a violence. Light, pure, hard, demanding light, slammed against my sour face, and I blinked and I looked, and I saw the last and first wonder of all. There was the rag man, folding the blanket most carefully, a scar on his forehead, but alive. And besides that, healthy. There was no sign of sorrow nor of age, and all the rags that he had gathered shined for cleanliness. Well, then I lowered my head, and trembling for all that I had seen, I myself walked up to the rag man. I told him my name with shame, for I was a sorry figure next to him. Then I took off all my clothes in that place, and I said to him, with dear yearning in my voice, "Dress me." He dressed me. My Lord, he put new rags on me, and I am a wonder beside him. The rag man, the rag man, the Christ. The end. When we talk about Triduums in the church, we are usually talking about Easter week, Monday, Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, Easter morning. But this past week has sort of a little Triduum of its own, one that I think some of us here appreciate particularly. We have All Hallows Eve, Halloween, which leads into All Saints Day, followed by All Souls Day, and for the observant, followed by All Brackets Day. So I don't know if you were scouring through the bracket for Lent Madness that came out on Friday or Saturday. But I looked at it, and I was immediately smiling because Mary and Martha of Bethany are on it, which seems appropriate for this Sunday. For those of you who don't know Lent Madness, it is a Lenten journey that looks at the lives of the saints. And in a contest that makes absolutely no sense, we vote them down to one person who gets the golden halo. More information about this will come as we get closer to Lent, but it is quite fun. I enjoy it thoroughly. And this year we'll get to return to Mary and Martha of Bethany, of whom we meet both of them this morning. And I love this story. I love Mary and Martha, which probably surprises no one, in part because I love the audacity it takes to walk up to Jesus. And we know from this text that Jesus is their friend. This is not a new encounter that they had written to Jesus when their brother first became ill to call him to his bedside. And Jesus had refused to go. And when he finally came, he found that his friend Lazarus had been dead for 4 days. And we only read one of them this morning, but both of the sisters have this moment in front of Jesus where they look at him and say, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." I love that moment. I love that it is given to these two women, women who feel maybe not on par with Jesus, but comfortable enough to issue this fairly direct challenge or lament. Depending on how I'm feeling that day, it's a challenge or a lament. Either a, "Why didn't you come sooner?" or a, "You could have prevented this and you didn't." I love it because I think that's how most of us feel when someone we love has died. That for all of the sort of strange and historical oddities that the biblical text can present us with, this is a moment we can identify with. This is a moment we can understand. "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." I do think the lectionary writers shortchange us a little bit because we get Mary's conversation with Jesus, which is shorter. And they cut out Martha's, which is a bit more theological. She and Jesus go back and forth for a second about the nature of the resurrection and the fact of her faith and how strong it is and what she believes. But I think we have largely shortchanged this entire story. Because we think of it, or at least I think of it, and I still do, even knowing this, as the raising of Lazarus. Now, if you go and you read the 11th chapter of John, you'll see Lazarus gets mentioned by name twice. Once at the beginning when we learn he is ill, and once at the very end when Jesus summons him out of the tomb. Most of this story is related to Lazarus, but it is about his sisters and their faith, and their willingness to walk up to this person whom they knew to be more than human, whom they knew to be their friend all at the same time, and remind him that he failed them in this moment, that he was not there and that their brother died. This is how we feel when someone we loved dies. And this gives us, I think, an insight into the lives of saints, an insight that I often hear as we work through Lent Madness and the collection of 32 saints from across sort of church history and the Bible and times. We debate why we love one and rather can't stand the other or tolerate them. And sort out who we're going to pick. So we have to wrestle with the humanness of these people who are lifted up as guiding stars on the Christian path. We get to remember the humanness of Mary and Martha this morning. We get to remember that in the lives of the saints, death and grief and perhaps anger and confusion are all present. We so often find them present in our own lives. present because life is often unfair. I think if you had sat down with Mary and Martha that morning or in any of the preceding 4 or 5 mornings as they realized their brother was dying and dead, as they prepared him for burial, and as they set about mourning a loss that would change their lives, they would have told you that this was not fair, that he was a good person whom they loved, that they wanted him back. Which probably sounds familiar. The world is often unfair, not just because people die, but because people were complicated, and we often get it wrong, even people who go on to be called saints by the church. They miss things. They sin and get back up again. This story of Mary and Martha, ends not just with Lazarus coming out of the tomb, but with Jesus issuing one last command, not to Lazarus. Because I increasingly believe this story only includes Lazarus, that it is actually about Mary and Martha. Jesus, looking at Lazarus, who has come likely stumbling out of the tomb because we are told he is still bound and wrapped in the cloth, issues one last commandment: unbind him and let him go. And as we look at the lives of the saints, we see that is often what they do. They look around themselves to the world. They see God's beloved children around them, bound up in fear, in faithlessness, in racism, in bigotry, and they set about unbinding them. They set about unbinding us. This is why we call them saints. Their lives, their stories, speak across the ages to our own. And this is always the delightful surprise of Lent Madness, as our ability to identify with saints from the craziest times and places. This past Lent, it was a deacon, an African-American deacon, who taught people and lifted an entire town out of post-slavery poverty that I think everyone in the room was cheering for. No one we had ever heard of before, a problem that is not what we would think of as perhaps an Albertan one, but a solution we loved, a woman we admired, a story we can aspire to. She looked around and she unbound the people around her from poverty and ignorance. Mary and Martha, we will return to as Lent comes. We will debate which one we like most. But as we are reminded every year, our votes matter to us, but they do not matter to the saints. They have all won their place in the canon of the saints, in the position of the church, in our own internal esteem, or lack thereof, depending on how you feel about each one. But part of what they speak to us is joining with Jesus as he looks at someone who needs help, who needs to be unbound. And across millennia and centuries, from all corners of the world, they remind us that our job is what Jesus leaves us with at the end of this passage: to look at our neighbors, to look at our loved ones, to look at those we struggle to love, and to join in the work of unbinding them and letting them go. Amen.